Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Martin is to guitars what the Stradivarius is to violins. The Pennsylvania-based Martin Guitar Company commemorates the 100th anniversary of its iconic dreadnought with a documentary film, The Ballad of the Dreadnought. The award-winning short film traces the rise of the iconic guitar from its humble beginnings to becoming the musical companion played in almost every musical genre in every corner of the world. Here to talk about that are musicologist Jerry Zoltan, an associate professor in Penn State's Department of Communication Arts and Sciences, and Dick Boak, Martin Guitar's longtime archivist and co-author with Jim Washburn of the gorgeous new coffee table book, The Martin Archives, a scrapbook of treasures from the world's foremost acoustic guitar maker. Thank you both so much for joining us.
A pleasure.
My pleasure.
Martin Guitar has been making some of the world's finest acoustic instruments since 1833, but the flagship of the fleet is the Dreadnought, which was first produced in 1916. For those who don't know, Dick Boak, explain what a Dreadnought is and why or how it came to be produced in the first place.
Well, there was gradually an increasing demand for larger and larger guitars because the guitar was competing with other instruments that were starting to have steel strings like the banjo and the mandolin. So the guitar grew gradually in size, and in 1915, at the Panama Pacific International Exposition in San Francisco, there was a Hawaiian exhibit that featured the Royal Hawaiian Band, and they were so popular that Hawaiian culture swept across the United States, and the band went on tour, and the audiences became bigger and bigger. And the person playing the guitar, his name was Major Kialaki, he needed a bigger guitar to project and compete with the other instruments. And he contacted Martin Guitar. He already played Martin ukuleles, but he contacted Martin Guitar and asked for a larger guitar. We made a larger guitar, and it still wasn't big enough. And we made a second guitar for him that eventually became the Martin Dreadnought.
And Jerry Zoltan, you have something to add to that.
Well, yes, you know, prior to this period, guitars were really small. They called them parlor guitars, and that really was what most guitar playing was about because they were played in front rooms and parlors in polite society.
By women, oftentimes.
Often by women, and Dick can certainly speak to that.
Well, you know, the men were off fighting wars and doing business and smoking cigars. The women were being cultural and intelligent and smarter.
Well, Jerry Zoltan, what makes the Martin Dreadnought arguably the most coveted acoustic guitar on earth?
You know, I can speak to that as someone who coveted one from the minute I first started playing guitar back, you know, in the 1960s. Word of mouth, seeing it everywhere, it was ubiquitous. All of my favorite musical artists in rock and roll and folk music, where there was an acoustic guitar, chances are it would be a Martin. And I think the obvious answer to that is that the Martin Company brought over a kind of level of craftsmanship from Germany, a craftsmanship born out of violin making, really the finest violin making. And they brought that to American shores about 1833 and began making guitars that lived up to that high standard of quality wood, quality workmanship. The result is a guitar that ages beautifully like a fine violin over the years, and you simply can't replicate that sound of a perfectly aged Martin guitar.
Well, speaking of a perfectly aged Martin guitar, Crosby of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young says that a Martin guitar sounds great right off the rack, but it sounds best after about 8 years of maturing. Would you agree with that, Dick Boak?
There is truth to it on three different levels. First of all, the plasticizer or the softener that keeps the lacquer soft enough to polish gradually dissipates, and that happens in about 3 or 4 months. So there's immediately an improvement in tone as the lacquer really dries thoroughly. And then there's something that happens where the instrument gets used to vibrating as one thing. Some musicians, Neil Young included, have a person that puts a vibrator onto the guitar and vibrates it to get it ready for a performance. And a guitar that is played often will improve just from getting used to vibrating. A third thing happens with the cellular structure of the wood, which contains moisture. Those cells over a longer period of time, and I think this is what David Crosby is talking about, The cells actually dispel their water, and the guitar shrinks a little bit and becomes very dry. And a dry-sounding guitar is really an attribute. So those three things happen with Martin guitars and help to contribute to the tone that we're known for.
I want to talk a little bit about what makes the Martin Dreadnought sound so iconic. You know, we hear people talking about the warm tones, the rich bass, the clean highs and lows, the purity of sound. So we have a clip of Black Mountain Rag, which is played on a Mountain Dreadnought by Doc Watson with backup by his son Merle. I want to play a little bit of that, and then beginning with you, Jerry Zoltan, tell me what makes this quintessential Martin Dread.
Well, Doc Watson, you can't beat Doc Watson. I think he's got a lot to do with it. But what you're hearing there is a beautifully large resonating body giving each string a very distinct tone, a richness. And one of the beautiful things about a Martin is that it was, you know, really precision made. When you put your finger behind that fret, you got exactly that note. The neck is what guitar players would call fast. You can move around. If you've got the skills of a Doc Watson, you can do something like what you're hearing in Black Mountain Rag.
The interesting thing about the Martin Dread is the versatility. You talked, Dick Boak, first about Major Kiyolaki and how he used the Martin Dreadnought for, you know, his Hawaiian style of music. And then you had country music in the 30s, and then later bluegrass with Bill Monroe. So many different genres can use the Martin guitar effectively.
Well, you know, there really are two distinctly different versions of the Martin Dreadnought. They both have a huge, big sound. They both are very, very good with vocal accompaniment because they kind of mimic the tonal range of a cello, which is akin to the human voice. But we make guitars in the Dreadnought size primarily out of mahogany, or the alternative is rosewood. And they're two very distinctly different things. Mahogany produces a very clean, clear, crisp, bright, glassine treble response. Still has a powerful bass, but the rosewood is very different. And the rosewood has a warm, rich, deep, resonant bass response. And I think the rosewood Martin Dreadnought is the one that is often seen with musicians like Paul McCartney and Elvis Presley and Hank Williams, perfect for vocal accompaniment. Whereas the D18, still an extremely viable instrument, is often seen in the studio because it doesn't have the heavy overtones of bass that are desirable for a vocalist.
Jerry?
And, you know, it's interesting. Bill Monroe, who you mentioned, loved a D28, so much so that he bought his own personal D28, and whoever was the guitar player in his band had to play that guitar.
Well, the guy who played it often and well was Del McCurry, who played and said that it had a tone all its own, that he would recognize that particular guitar just by sound. He wouldn't need to see it. All he had to do was hear it, and he would know it was the one he played when he was playing with Bill Monroe.
Dick, that was a 1939 Martin D28, was it not?
Well, you know more than I do, Jerry. I think so.
You keep referring to as the D28. You know, there's the D18, the D28, the D35. I think Johnny Cash played the D45. Explain this whole D series and how it became shortened to a D and a number that followed, Dick Boak.
Well, actually, the prefix of our nomenclature, the first part is the size of the guitar, and the suffix after the dash is the style of the guitar. So the Dreadnought size actually was named after a large class of British battleships from World War I. The Dreadnought battleship was the largest battleship of its class that had ever been made. And the Martin family, C.F. Martin III and his father, Frank Henry, were both history buffs, and they loved the name Dreadnought. They thought it was perfect for the guitar. Now, the other part of the nomenclature.
And we might mention, Dick Boak, that the name literally meant fear not or dread nothing. So the idea behind this battleship named the Dreadnought was that this was going to provide the public with security and protection in the event of war.
I suppose so. I mean, I hope the guitar lived up to it. I don't know if the ship ever did, but the guitar certainly did.
But I think the musicians who played the Dreadnought felt safe behind it, you know?
Well, Johnny Cash said, we asked him for a quote, and he said, "I feel safe with a Martin."
and
thought he, that was funny.
He played the D-35.
Yeah, and you know, the number comes from the price. Back in the mid-1800s, Martin kept getting duplicate orders for the same styling of guitars, and they distilled everything down and just made the price $18, $28, $38, whatever. Those numbers were associated with the style of the instrument, and they kind of stuck. And so even though inflation has changed the price over the years pretty considerably, we kept those numbers for our nomenclature.
Well, you know, a lot has changed over the years. I thought, as I was reading about the Martin Guitar Company, a couple of amazing things. First is the fact that this has been a family-run business since it was started in 1833, and that it's been successful. So often, the next generation isn't interested in taking over the family business. That's not the case here. And the second remarkable thing is that it took 157 years from 1833 to 1990 for Martin to sell its first 500,000 guitars. And then it just took another 14 years by 2014 for Martin to sell its 1,000,000th guitar. Talk a little bit, if you would, Jerry Zoltan, about the ups and downs and really living on the edge sometimes for Martin Guitar. There were some tough periods after the Great Depression, for example.
Yeah, it's rather interesting. I think most people associate the Martin name with a guitar, but really they made a variety of instruments. And during the Depression, the guitar kind of fell into a dry spell, and people didn't have the money. It was a high-end instrument back then. But the ukulele actually took off and sustained the company during some very tough times. You know, in the 30s, the vododio age of college ukulele players really helped keep the company afloat.
And I understand there's been a bit of a resurgence of the ukulele. Is that right, Dick Boak?
Yeah, the first wave was certainly the mid-1920s, and the second wave happened really as a result of World War II and the Americans, Marines and soldiers being over in Hawaii and kind of bringing the ukulele back into popularity. Elvis Presley and Marilyn Monroe played a part in that. And then more recently, in the last 10 years or so, the ukulele has experienced the third wave of extreme popularity. I think George Harrison might have had a part in that. He always had a slew of ukuleles in the trunk of his car, and when he went to visit anybody, he'd pull them out and teach everybody a couple of chords and get everybody playing. It's a fun instrument.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guests are musicologist and Penn State professor Jerry Zoltan and Martin Guitar's archivist Dick Boak. Boak was an advisor, and both men are featured in the new documentary film The Ballad of the Dreadnought, which commemorates the 100th anniversary of the Martin Dreadnought, which was created back in 1916. Tell us, Dick Boak, because you were an advisor on that film, a little bit about this film, where it's seen, what the purpose was of producing it.
Well, it's not seen in movie theaters. We produced it starting out just to really tell the story because it hadn't been told in video fashion before. We were so pleased with the result that we started to seek out some of the many, many musicians that play the Martin Dreadnought to participate in the film. And so we started with Crosby, Stills, and Nash, all great friends of the company, and Steve Miller of Steve Miller Band, and Roger McGuinn, and Seth Avett, and so many other artists. And we built the film from conversations with those artists, mixed in with the evolutionary story, the historical story of how the Dreadnought came to be and all of the genres that it moved through.
And Jerry Zoltan, you're bringing that film to Penn State. So the most coveted acoustic guitar on earth will have its history screening here, followed by Q&A with you and with Dick, who's been with the company now for more than 40 years and in an unbelievable variety of capacities. I understand you've actually built more than 100 guitars yourself.
Well, my guitars aren't as nice as Martin guitars.
Yes.
But that was early on in my career before I got to Martin. And these days, or at least in the last 15 years, I've caused a lot of special guitars to be made and a lot of collaborations with the heroes of my musical youth. So it's a great place to work and a great company.
And I want to follow up on that in just a moment. But first, if you would, what's the purpose of bringing it to Penn State? What's your hope for this event?
Sure. Well, I have to say, first of all, that I was thrilled to be asked by the Martin Company to write an extensive piece for the Martin Guitar Journal about this very story. And in the beginning of the piece, I kind of likened the guitar to a ballad song. And I'd like to think that that might have inspired the title of the film, The Ballad of the Dreadnought. Bringing it to Penn State will give people in our community a chance to really get to know something about this iconic guitar. I mean, it's right in our own backyard.
Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
When the band sang, I went down to Nazareth, they were talking about the Martin Guitar factory in Nazareth. And then to boot, to have Dick Boak here as well is an incredible bonus. Dick is an extraordinary presenter, and we're going to have some fun and tell stories and question Q&A. And I think Dick might bring along some images of remarkable things that few people have ever had a chance to see that are in the Martin archives. I know in writing the story, held in my hand was a letter from the Carter family, you know, praising the Martin guitars and wanting to inquire about prices and that sort of thing. So all of that will be on hand. A very, really rare opportunity right here in Central PA.
So some of the many letters that artists have sent to you, you mentioned a moment ago, Dick Boak, about working with artists in creating limited editions and signature guitars. Some of the most interesting stories are, you know, people like the Gene Autry limited edition guitar. What's involved in doing that? I'm imagining that your guys and women take them apart, steam them apart. You know, just how exact a duplicate are you making?
Well, we're not steaming them apart because Gene Autry's guitar is worth about $1.5 million as it is. It's on display at the Western Heritage Museum, the Autry Museum in Hollywood. We had a dinner there, and afterwards we looked at the exhibit and we were just so thrilled to see the Gene Autry D45 from 1933 there, one of the most famous and valuable instruments ever made. And after dinner, Chris Martin spoke with Gene and asked if he would consider having us replicate the instrument. And Gene was thrilled about that as long as a charitable royalty would be paid to the museum in support of what he was trying to do there. So that kind of set a precedent for future projects. Chris Martin and I both love the idea that instead of paying people to endorse your product like the sneaker companies do, that the people are really doing it because they love the product. And it's not about money. And because it's not about money, literally millions of dollars have been raised for the charities of the artist's choosing.
You know what? Yeah. I watched a video where you mentioned Chris Martin, who is the great-great-great-grandson of the founder of the company. Not a guitar player, though, by the way. But he talked about pressure when he first became the chairman and CEO to work with celebrities to bring them on board and do just what you said, pay them to endorse it. And he said he thought it was just so much more meaningful if Paul McCartney walked into a music store, as he's done, and bought a Martin guitar right off the rack.
Absolutely, and that's what they've done. In fact, Paul and John both bought their guitars together, their Martins, on Denmark Street in London back around the time that Magical Mystery Tour came out. And within about a week, John used it on the video for the song Hello, Goodbye. So people can go look on YouTube at that part of musical history. But about 6 months later, they went to India, and they took the two Martin guitars along, and they kind of got stuck there. They couldn't get a plane out. And so they sat down and wrote 42 songs that became The White Album, Abbey Road, and Let It Be.
You know, all on the Martin guitars.
You know, someone once said, if you can't play and produce a song that sounds good on a Martin guitar, it's just not a good song.
Yeah, I think that was Sturgill Simpson. another great, great dreadnought player.
So to you, Jerry Zoltan, I began this conversation by saying that the Martin is to the guitar what Stradivarius is to the violin. And you, in that commemorative piece you mentioned writing about the dreadnought, you say to call the Martin dreadnought iconic is neither cliche nor hyperbole. In a nutshell, you know, what made it the most popular instrument in the world, surpassing the piano?
Absolutely. Well, I think as far as the, you know, there was an old saying, if a guy brings his piano to a party, you can be darn sure he's going to play it. Well, the portability of a guitar is huge. And I think that's one reason that the guitar has become so front and center. But at the same time, you know, the sound that a Martin guitar produces is everything. And seeing it in the hands of some of the great artists who play it helps, you know, add to its gravitas. And it's a very cool thing to have. My Martin came to me through a family that had had it for a couple of generations. Nobody in the family played it. They didn't know how. But it was the same guitar that Hank Williams played. And so they kept it. You know, it's kind of a family treasure.
Well, I understand that there is a guitar that first belonged to Hank Williams, then Bob Dylan inherited that guitar, and then I think Neil Diamond. And I'm kind of curious to know what something that had been in the hands of that many great artists might be worth today, and if Neil Diamond still has it. Do you know, Jerry?
Dick probably does.
Well, I think it's actually Neil Young that owns the guitar, and he owns a number of them. He also owns one that was in an Elliot Ness raid and has machine gun holes through the side of the guitar. And he jokes about it and says that he doesn't mind the extra sound holes. And that's a little bit like Willie Nelson, who has literally worn a hole right through the top of his Martin guitar from just excessive playing for the last 4.5 decades.
He might be one of the people who said that the Martin sounds best when it's, you know, almost at destruction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He won't get it fixed either. He says he likes it just the way it is. But you know, the guitar that Neil owns that belonged to Hank Williams, I think you can't really put a price on it. Like so many of the guitars, I mean, how much is the guitar worth that Paul McCartney recorded Blackbird on, or you know, it's priceless.
But if you take the musician out of the calculation, I don't think it's unusual for a vintage Martin from the 50s or so to be certainly worth in the high four figures. And the older you get, and the more rare the model, it wouldn't be out of question to pay in the five figures, and in some rare exceptions, perhaps as many as six figures. Is that about right, Dick?
Well, we've purchased guitars. We have a D45 in our museum that sold originally for a couple of $100s, and we purchased it back for $375,000. So, you know, people do talk about the investment value of Martin guitars, and it certainly has been true. We can't guarantee that a guitar is going to escalate to that extent, but the guitars from the pre-World War II period, which is really when the guitar came of age, and all the ingredients, the tone woods, the design, the level of craftsmanship all came together just to produce magnificent instruments. And those instruments are really the inspiration to us to keep preserving and making great-sounding guitars that emulate the tone of the pre-war instruments.
You know, C.F. Martin, who started the company, is known for his innovation and as being an astute businessman and for following the trends and responding to what the public wanted. I'm wondering what you think he would think of the company as it exists today, 184 years after he started it.
I don't think he would even fathom how it's grown and succeeded. It's unbelievable. Let alone having survived the Civil War and the Spanish-American War and the World War I and the Great Depression and World War II and the disco age and the Bee Gees.
The Bee Gees, right, the 80s. It survived the 80s.
Just barely. And and we're, you know, we're going to be around for a long, long time. You know, we're not going anywhere. So I think it's the old story of building a better mousetrap. If you focus on doing a great job, building something great, people will flock to it.
You mentioned the 80s, and it was really the MTV Unplugged, which is responsible in part for the resurgence of the popularity, Jerry Zoltan, in the Martin Dreadnought.
Yes, there are interesting media events that do that, and I would also add that the Coen Brothers movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, introduced acoustic music to a whole new generation of players who are out there right now making great music on acoustic guitars and Martin guitars in particular. And, you know, I do recommend that folks consider a visit to the Martin factory in Nazareth. Dick has put together an incredible visual display that shows you the entire history of the company.
In fact, many people consider that almost a religious
pilgrimage.
Yeah, a bucket list thing. And you mentioned wood earlier. I just wanted to talk, you know, we're talking about the future, the past, the fascinating past of Martin Guitar, but also its future. And I know that the woods you mentioned earlier, the Brazilian rosewood and the Honduran mahogany and the spruce, all the woods that have gone into it, some of them are impossible to acquire these days. It's actually illegal to export rosewood from Brazil these days. So what does that mean for your company, Dick Boak?
Well, it certainly has forced us to experiment with literally hundreds of different species of wood, to test the viability of and the tonal qualities of different species. And what we've discovered is that rosewood is at one end of the spectrum, being a very heavy wood. Mahogany is at the other end of the spectrum, being quite a light wood. And there's a lot in between that are all very, very viable, especially if you pay attention to the thicknessing, the appropriate thicknessing of the wood, and using them for the right component of the guitar. So it's kind of like composing a symphony. You just want to do everything exactly right, and that's what we've done. We've done our homework, and we're prepared for really any eventuality with respect to difficulties in sourcing some of the traditional tone woods. But we will be making great guitars regardless.
All right, and on that note, we are out of time. Thank you both so much for talking with me.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure, and I'm a huge fan of Jerry's and very excited to come to Penn State and preview the film.
Yeah, come on out, everybody, and see us at Penn State's Petit Library Foster Auditorium, 7 o'clock.
That was musicologist Jerry Zoltan, an associate professor in Penn State's Department of Communication, Arts, and Sciences, and Dick Boak, Martin Guitar's Director of Museum, Archives, and Special Projects. The two are featured in the award-winning short documentary, The Ballad of the Dreadnought, which celebrates the 100th anniversary of the iconic guitar. A free screening and a post-film Q&A will be held in Petit Library's Foster Auditorium on the University Park campus of Penn State on Wednesday, February 22nd from 7 until 9, with a free screening on the Penn State Altoona campus the following afternoon. For more information, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.